Okay, this is October 28th. This is Ina Gusenfeld interviewing Tom Bess. And are we ready to begin?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So, I know that your family moved from Harlem to the South Bronx in 1944. Can you tell me what some of their motivations were?
We owned brownstones. My family owned brownstones on 123rd Street in Harlem, about 12. And the time came when Harlem was no longer the Harlem that they wanted and loved, which meant there were no stores, grocery stores, allowed on 7th Avenue because it was a boulevard. And you didn't dare go there unless you were dressed. And the men would have on their spats, and the ladies with hats and pocketbooks and gloves. Well, all of that changed, I guess, around 1940, and I don't know that for sure. But they didn't want to stay in Harlem anymore. And they said, well, we would go up to the South, up to the Bronx. It was not called the South Bronx. And so they found a wonderful, wonderful home, and we moved there in 1944. 14 rooms, 3 stories plus basement.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you describe the street on which you lived?
Yeah. It's wonderful. Across the street from the houses was an Episcopal church, St. Margaret's. And the church was in, it was a triangle that it formed. And the church had an iron gate all around the property. And the Jewish families in the neighborhood all sat out there every day to catch the sun so that in the mornings, they sat on one side, and in the afternoon, they sat on the other, and then later in the afternoon, then they'd go home. And this was every day. And the neighborhood was quite diverse. There were Italians, Irish, blacks, and Jews.
What was the street called?
It was 156th Street, 156th Street between Kelly and Dawson.
Great. What are some of your early recollections of Longwood? I remember reading that there were many artists and musicians there in the time.
I don't know. I don't remember. I was a kid. So, I played stickball in the streets with the covers.
Right.
So I don't remember that too much. I know the buildings were beautiful buildings, and we always appreciated them. And it was only later that I realized that the people who lived in the surrounding areas, one of whom was Colin Powell, and another person was Fernando Ferrer. And Freddie used to always say, they wouldn't come up to where the house that those brownstones were because it was like the sacrosanct. They didn't want to disrupt anything. And but they were very well made. They had a front yard where people would sit and you could speak to your neighbors. It's very nice, very very warm, inviting neighborhood.
This would be skipping ahead a bit, but how did you become involved with preservation?
That opens up the Longwood story. In the 70s, the Bronx started burning down. That's what prompted President Carter to come and go to Charlotte Street.
That's right.
And a friend of mine and I She was over at my, she lived diagonally across from where I was, where I lived. And she was over, and we were just talking. She was over, we were upstairs. I had the top floor as my own personal apartment, and my family lived downstairs. So we were upstairs, and we had bay windows. So we were standing in the window, and we were saying, what a magnificent neighborhood that was, that you could look out and see. And like we had a wonderful vantage point looking over at the church. And one of us said, I don't remember which one, gee, it's a shame the way houses are burning. People are getting scared and they're moving out. And that's going to change the character and personality of this whole area. And maybe we should try to do something. So we wound up at the Community Planning Board, which is Community Planning Board 2 in the Bronx. And there was a wonderful district manager there whose name right now I can't remember. And we told him of our concern. And he said, well, you know, why don't you two just, you know, come to the board meetings and listen? So we did. And then one day Marilyn got a call, or I got a call, I don't remember which. And he said, you know, have you guys ever thought about historic designation for that area because your houses are so lovely? And we said, no, we hadn't thought about it. And he said, well, why don't you think about it? And we did. We went back up to the board and we talked with the board about it. And then we made formal application with his help, the district manager's help. We made formal application to the Landmarks Preservation Commission. And Kent Barwick was the chair at that time. And Lenore was his assistant. We applied in 1979, mm-hmm. and I'm not clear. It's either July of 79 or July of 80. I think it was, I may have it wrong.
That the designation or the application?
The designation.
1980,
because I think it was 80, yeah.
Based on what I've read, that it was put to the Landmarks Commission in 1979.
Yeah. And then they, before they designated, they needed to have a public hearing. So for the first time, they left their lofty halls and they came to the Bronx for the hearing at the county, the Bronx County Courthouse on 161st Street. And we marshaled all the neighbors that we could over there, including those in wheelchairs, to support the position that this was a neighborhood very worthy of being saved. And it was successful, and they went back and they voted designation, and thus we had the Longwood Historic District, and that came in July of 80.
Yeah. You've often said in interviews that Longwood saw itself as somewhat removed from the surrounding parts of the South Bronx. How did the borough's decline affect Longwood, if at all?
It didn't.
That's interesting.
It didn't. It didn't. People really loved their homes. And our position was clear. When I say our, I mean me and Marilyn. It was, we adopted the motto of Banana Kelly. And it was, don't move, improve. Now, the big piece here is trying to think. Yeah, I jumped ahead of myself. Before we applied for designation, we didn't dare do that without the neighbors saying, yes, we want it. So the onus of getting them to want to do that, because preservation did not have a good name in low-income areas, because people felt that they were being told what they had to do with their homes and how they had to do it. They did not understand the landmarks law. So what she and I did, we held meetings, town hall meetings, in the auditorium across the street at the Episcopal Church, St. Margaret's. And she and I, we will never forget it because it was wonderful, we rang 144 doorbells for the whole area, inviting them to come to a meeting that we would hold to discuss what we were going to do to save our homes. And the first meeting was very well attended. People came. And what I realized, or Marilyn realized, was that people needed to ventilate to get all of that anxiety out of them. Because they were frightened, they were worried. It was their property, their investment. They had initially wanted to be able to pass these homes down to their children, but now people want it out. So we just let them talk. Then we scheduled a second meeting, again letting them talk. And I don't remember whether it was the second or the third meeting, we finally said, okay, we've gone over this before now. We're repeating ourselves. We have some suggestions. What about applying for landmark designation, and that would save these homes? Thus, we had their permission, and they supported that, and we were able to go to the Landmarks Commission, and then later we got the designation.
I've read that many local efforts to stem crime and arson, which was rampant in the South Bronx, they were really part of a larger effort to revitalize the South Bronx. And I was wondering if you were involved in any of these efforts.
No. No, we were an entity unto ourselves.
Now, how did you and Marilyn get the idea to form the Longwood Historic District Community Association?
Kent Barwick, with his wonderful foresight, said, well, you know, you're now designated. Why don't we bring some of the commissioners up to Longwood and let's have some community meetings like what you've been doing, and let's talk about how to preserve and thus appreciate what you have and how to maintain it. And so these meetings were set up, and all kinds of things were discussed, and it was absolutely wonderful because as a result of those meetings, we began to hear our neighbors whom we had known all of our lives talking about lintels on windows and all kinds of stuff. And I was tickled. I thought it was wonderful. But it developed a sense of wanting to preserve the neighborhood. Now, your question was what?
How did you form the Historic District Association?
So, after Kent and the commission stopped seeing us, and at that time we were meeting in the Lynch PAL Center. It was a huge area. It had been a farm earlier. And we were meeting there, and we said, you know, well, what are we going to do? And we said, well, first of all, we need to come up with a name for the area.
Mm-hmm.
We knew it was called the Landmarks, along with Historic District by the Preservation Commission, but we wanted an association. And again, I think the Community Planning Board may have had some given may have given us some direction there. So I remember this meeting. It was interminable. We met to come up with a name, and we came up with the name Longwood Historic District Community Association. And then we thought, well, we're going to need funding to get some programs done. And someone at the Landmarks Commission sort of steered us in the right direction. We began calling other historic districts and talking to them. And the very first thing that we got that was really spectacular was we got a grant to do a facade and street improvement program. And this gave each homeowner $2,000, because it was a grant, to fix up the facades of their building. But it created that sense of uniformity that makes districts unique. And so we were able to offer money. Well, that went over very big. And so it was very successful. And then we went to the people who came up with the I Love New York slogan. They were helping us. We went all over the city. Marilyn and I just went talking to historic districts and people who knew about the historic process and the value of these. And we would just sit and talk. And from that, well, that's how we got started, but I know what I was thinking. Someone had to sell their home. Up to that point, those houses were going for like $19,000. And because of the designation, when the house was, the person got $35,000, well, that did it. It was, everybody realized the value then of the historic designation. And so then we began trying to get money to help people do internal repairs in their homes. And one of the friends of Marilyn came up with the idea. You know, I know of this woman whose name is Anita Miller, and she is with an arm of the Ford Foundation, and it's called LISC. And I think you guys should talk to her. Well, we did. We spoke to Anita, and she was terribly... She came up to my house, and we sat in the living room. And we spent hours talking, and she said... The reason for the Local Initiative Support Corporation, which is LISC, is that we look to agencies like, into communities like yours, where you're doing self-help, and we try to help. So, with that help came money to hire an executive director who came out of Chicago. LISC paid for her to move her and her family to New York, put them up in housing until they found something more permanent, and to set up our office. And thus the association began its work helping to address the needs of the homeowners in Longwood.
Wow. Were there other city and non-governmental organizations that funded you? I'm just curious how you came to their attention.
Yeah, we got a lot of money. Yeah, I mean, we had four people on staff. We had benefits for them. And we set up, with the help of Anita Miller and a woman that she sent up to help us, Jane Stanicky. Jane was a vice president at Bowery Savings Bank. She came up to help us set up a soft bank, whereas we did not have to have rigid rules that you had to prove if you borrowed money that you could pay back, because Anita's position, and I certainly thought it was wonderful, was that, you know, we knew the people, we knew our neighbors, we knew who paid their bills and who didn't. And so if they came and said, you know, I need new windows, because I think, I don't remember the year now, but I think those houses went up in 19... I used to know the years. I think 19... It was a turn of the century.
I think it was 1897 to 1903.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And they had wooden windows. Well, you know, by these windows, many of them needed replacement. And we needed to make sure that we, since we were a historic district, that the right windows went in. Unfortunately, people jumped the gun, and the word was out, and so these companies went ringing doorbells themselves, and they put in those aluminum windows. But we were against that, but there was nothing we could do. But there were those who did replace their windows with wooden windows. So that was like one reason where they might have needed some money to do that. And so they borrowed from us, and the payback rate was like 3%. And so, but it was terribly successful. Very successful. And that's how we became an entity that was known around the city. Longwood became very successful, I feel. And then because I talk so much, I was called by either Kent or maybe by this time Jean Norman had come in as the chair of the commission. And we had several meetings. And then someone called and said, you know, there's an issue with St. Bartholomew's in Manhattan. It's a preservation issue. And we would like you to come with us. We're having a freedom ride up to Albany to address one of the subcommittees in Albany. And so we all met at Grand Central Station, and Mayor Koch was there, and we had breakfast, and then we got on the train. Jackie Kennedy came with us, and we went up, and it was a whole day. Well, that did it. So then the next thing I know, I got a phone call, but I go with them to Washington to talk to one of the House subcommittees again on the inner city problem. And that became the handle that I used. Now, Marilyn was very helpful because I could discuss everything with her. But she had a husband and children and a family and grandparents. So my being single, I was able to do the traveling, and so I did. And I went to Washington and spoke before subcommittees on the inner city problem, because we had survived it, and that's how it got started.
Oh. So just to talk about the designation process itself, I'm curious if there were any communities that you looked to as models for your efforts initially.
No, because we became, I think, unique. We were the second district designated in the entire Bronx, the first being on Alexander Avenue, and it was only one block. We were, I think, 15 blocks. So we were large. So did we look to anyone? No, it was, you know, trial and error.
And did you encounter any opposition from Longwood and also maybe outside of Longwood in the surrounding neighborhood?
No, not at all. They were very proud of what we had done.
Great. Now, I'm curious if you or any of the members of the association had any prior experience dealing with city agencies that made the process somehow easier or less intimidating?
No. Now, they were, you know, we had, of course, we had a, we formed a board of directors, of course, made up of homeowners. And Marilyn and I co-chaired the board. No, we didn't have any problems. Now, in terms of how did we deal with city agencies, that's what our executive director of the association did. She smoothed out the way. She sort of knew, even though she was from Chicago, she knew how to wheel and deal. And we got lots of grants for various projects. So we were fortunate.
So would you say that there weren't really any challenges in the designation process for you guys?
There may have been, and I just don't remember. I mean, we've been talking 1979, 1980.
Yeah.
But I know Kent said to me later, he said, your designation went through faster than most of them in the city. It never is that fast. And we went through, from the time we applied, I think it was a little less than a year.
Why was that the case, if you know?
I don't. I mean, I think Mayor Koch and the commission may have wanted to say, see, we've gone into the inner city and the Bronx was having all of that notoriety and celebrity, and they wanted to say, we're working with them, and here we now have put together and are helping a historic district. I think a lot of it was political.
Who are some of the major players that helped move the designation process forward?
Kent Barwick, Lenore. Why don't I remember her name? Lenore was his secretary or assistant, and I can't remember her name, her last name. But she was wonderful because Kent, of course, was extremely busy. But she was always available when I called her. Off Maryland called. So who were some of the other players? Our community board was supportive. And the district manager. And I guess that was it. And Maryland and I did the rest. We wrote letters and all made phone calls. But the designation process was not difficult for us. And of course, we were younger. And that helped.
So one of the wonderful things about this was that the LPC sent people to Longwood. And I understand they came maybe twice a week or so.
Yes.
To educate you guys about, yeah, architectural details.
Yes.
And I was wondering how that affected the way the residents saw the neighborhood.
Big time. Like, I remember one meeting, one of the board members came in very upset because someone had painted the facade of their building on Dawson Street. And I couldn't believe it. I think they wound up leaving it, but the word went out, you do not do that, because they saw that was an eyesore. It wasn't nice. So that we had a lot of educating to do. Because, you know, we had to explain why you wouldn't use aluminum windows, why you did not sandblast that wonderful brick. all kinds of things. Why you tried to restore as much as possible whenever you did anything to improve, you went back to the original. And so that's the kind of thing that went out, and it was accepted. I mean, remember, we were giving these people money. So money talks.
Yeah. Now, I actually didn't know this until I looked on LPC's website, but Longwood was extended in 1983.
That's correct.
And so I was wondering if you could tell me about that and your involvement.
Well, the core of Longwood, the buildings were all contiguous. Then there was a break, and there were two blocks, Macy Place and Hewitt Place, that had wonderful buildings. They didn't have the half mansard roofs that we had, but they were wonderful brownstones. And we felt, you know, let's protect that too. That's the area we walked to get to the subway. So why not protect that area? And so we did. We talked with the commission. They went up and did their surveys, and in 83, those two blocks were also designated.
And was this designation process this time around just as kind of easygoing as the one before?
It was done before I realized it. Yeah.
Great. What tools and lessons did you guys take away from the designation process the first time around?
Be nice to people. And that's it. I mean, if you're nice to people, they are nice with you. I mean, they had to give us some bad news every once in a while, but we worked everything out. So what we carried away, I don't know.
Did any of the surrounding communities or any organizations approach you to learn from your experience or
Absolutely.
To talk about your experience?
Oh, yeah. The Forest Hill, Forest Avenue houses on 165th Street, they called constantly for us to come up and meet with their little group, their steering committee, I guess. And we told them what to do. They have since been designated. Yes, we met with several groups about our success. And of course, we became very friendly with Freddie Ferrer. Now, do you know that name?
Yes.
Okay. Freddie was the director of small homes for the then borough president. And then he became a city councilman. And he and his wife, Aramina, would come to my house with me and Marilyn, and the four of us became very good friends. And we just talked about how do we make sure this process is going to work. And so that was a wonderful ally that we made with Freddie. And of course, after he became borough president also.
Yeah. Now, I've read an interview with you. This was 1990 in Village Views. And you might...
Christabel
may remember that. Yeah.
Yes.
And it seemed that there was this idea that Landmarks was neglecting communities of color in the 70s and the 80s.
That was the thought. That was the thought because... Did I really say that?
Well, the interesting thing was that you didn't, but they asked you about that repeatedly, and you didn't respond to that.
Well, because, you know, I'm thinking back, and I'm saying, why would I have said that? Because I don't think they neglected. I just don't think that there was enough knowledge about the preservation process that was known for people to go and approach the commission. Had we not had our district manager, this never would have happened for us.
So he was the one acting as the
liaison. He was the catalyst.
Now, of the people who were involved in the process, how many would you say kind of stayed on the Longwood radar? Was this an issue that people really continued to work on?
They stayed. We didn't lose people. Like, I'm referring to the board of directors. One of the things that we wanted was that we have representation from every block. And then it was, how do we get each block to police itself? Marilyn came up with wonderful ideas, one of which was, well, you know, during the middle of the night, people get up and they go to their windows and they look out on the street if they see anything happening. So maybe we should all have phone numbers for people who have cars in the street, and if anybody is bothering their car, you can call them or call the police. And that was very helpful. And so that was yet another reason why people wanted to stay involved with the process.
I know you mentioned Forest Avenue houses have similar designations followed in the South Bronx since Longwood?
No. You've got Alexander Avenue, the Longwood Historic District, Forest houses, and of course, all of the Bronx now is called the South Bronx, but Riverdale was in a class unto itself. It had not been designated. It still is not designated, but a small portion is.
Now, why do you think that is?
I don't know, because they've got an absolutely wonderful advocate who lives there with his wife, and he raised his family there. Robert, I can't remember Robert's last name. It'll come to me. And he pushed for years. He would go down to the commission and argue for designation. He finally got a certain area designated, but all of Riverdale is not designated. I don't know what the reason is. I don't know.
Were there some historic buildings that you fought for but lost to development? In the Bronx?
In the Bronx or in Longwood?
I recall you mentioning some buildings, maybe some theaters even, around Longwood, but some of them may even have been around Harlem. This would have been in 1990.
I don't recall. You know, we lost all of our movie theaters. They all went. We lost all of our nightclubs. They went. And then, we lost all movie theaters were big back when I was growing up, and there were none there now, up there. So I don't remember that too much.
How is Longwood doing today?
I suspect Longwood is doing all right. There is no association that has disbanded because no one wanted to put in the effort that it took. And I, of course, went to every meeting. And then once the Historic Districts Council was formed, I joined that. And I remained a board member on the Historic Districts Council for ever. And nobody else wanted to get involved at that level that I was involved around the city and as I said, you know, going, I would go and I would go to the city council and I would give a speech on why certain buildings should be kept in the city, not just. So, but there is no advocate for Longwood right now, which I find sad. But it hasn't done, I mean, it hasn't created any problems, but I've seen some buildings come down. Now, one of the other things we did when we were up and running was we got funding, and Longwood has very long streets. And the streets on Longwood Avenue, those buildings were in bad repair, and they were not designated. So what we did was we got an architect, some engineers, and we put up new housing that complemented the brownstones. And they're still there. People are still living in them. There have been problems, but none of the houses are empty.
So you mentioned that some of the houses have come down. Are these the historic ones?
No. We would not have allowed that, and Longwood would not have allowed that. Although maybe there was one or so, I don't know. But as best I recall, we did not lose any buildings. And I remember one of the arguments that we used was when we got designated, there were 7 or 6 abandoned buildings in the district. They have since been bought and fixed up and sold. So that, you know, that's a positive. So that we had very few blank pieces of property. Whether it's still that way, I don't know, because I don't get a chance to go up there that much.
In what, you mentioned that the association disbanded, what year or around what time would that have been?
Dear Lord. I left in 1989, 1990. I would say around 1995. I could be wrong, but I think that's a good date, a good year that it did fold.
Now, when.
Because, excuse me, a lot of the original board members died. These are people who had lived up there forever. Like my family. I mean, we had been there since 1944. Marilyn's family had been there. Thankfully, she's not dead. But she's still a young woman, I think. And many of the board members who could appreciate the value of that, they died off.
Now, around the time that you began to work with HDC, or you served as their board member, were you still living in Longwood?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was living there. We still had our board of directors, and I was the chair. Marilyn had resigned. And I stayed on as the chair. And that was when we put together HDC. And then my commitment with HDC became intense. And I resigned from as chairman and had someone replace me. And I stayed on the board because there was just so many projects we had going on. And, I stayed involved in Longwood still after I was on HDC.
And do you live in Longwood still?
Oh, my dear God, no. I moved in 1990-something. 1991. I was asked by the then Senator David Patterson to form a preservation organization and presence in Harlem. And I took a leave of absence from my job because I was a court reporter when I worked. I took a leave of absence and I put together a preservation organization in Harlem and got funding, and we did very well, and then that fell apart. But I moved out of Longwood, I guess, 1989 or so, 1990. I moved to Greenwich Village for 3 years because I bought a wonderful condominium in Battery Park City. And that's where I lived for the next 15 years.
Great. What challenges do you foresee for Longwood in the next decade?
I don't know if I can answer that competently. It's surviving. It's not organized, and the original board members have disbanded, and they, as I said, many of them have died. But the neighborhood still looks good.
To your knowledge, has gentrification touched Longwood?
Yeah. It's now more Hispanic than anything else. And they take pride in the neighborhood, too. They want a safe home.
Are you currently working on any preservation or revitalization projects?
No. I am not. First of all, I've gotten old. I don't have the energy to run around like I used to. And I now live in New Jersey. I no longer live in the city. I'm in the city all the time, but I do now live in New Jersey, and I'm involved in so many other things in my life that I just am not that active in preservation anymore. I mean, when I come to the city, I have to park. This was a gift for instance, getting this spot right now. Yeah. But, trying to park, it's a whole thing. Although HDC has a wonderful area on 2nd Avenue and 11th Street. But no, the answer is no, I'm not involved anymore. I think I'm one of the few who got away.
Now, what I found interesting is that given the big success story that is Longwood, there hasn't really, or at least I don't know, anything been published just about Longwood apart from its context within South Bronx.
The New York Times. David Dunlap did a wonderful article, very big article, years ago in the 80s on Longwood with pictures. And for about 6 months after the article came out in the paper, and I think it may have been in the Sunday edition, we got letters at the office from people as far away as Alaska, Washington State, and he had pictures of different sections and areas of the historic district. And I remember one letter came with a picture of the article, and this woman said, "And I was born right in that where that window is." So we had that was wonderful, but other publicity, yes. I became very active with the National Trust for Historic Preservation in Washington. Richard Moe became the president. And he was very interested in what I had done, and he was even more interested in what I was doing at that time in Harlem for preservation. I would suspect, you know, that was all. I mean, we were, Longwood became a name that was known around as a viable South Bronx historic district.
Did you have any famous visitors? I know Jimmy Carter came.
Well, not to Longwood. He went up to Crotona.
Just South Bronx.
He was up at Crotona Park where Charlotte Street is. Mm-hmm. But with one of the projects that we began working on, and I think it may have been the facade and street improvement program, but I'm not too sure. Mayor Koch came, and we had wonderful newspaper coverage of his visit with pictures. And he spoke about the benefits of the historic district there. Famous people. Colin Powell was not in the district. He was across the street on Longwood Avenue on Kelly Street. And so, off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone else.
Great. So, I found that Longwood is often credited with just really revitalizing the city's faith in the South Bronx.
Yes, it was the oasis.
How do you think preservation can serve as a tool for struggling communities today?
It will help to stabilize the area. It will help to foster a sense of community among the residents and owners, and it will certainly raise property value.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, because I think, given the way things are today, some people would say, well, if it's raising property value, then it's attracting gentrifiers, and in some sense,
but what's
putting
wrong
people
with
out of the neighborhood.
See, that has never been like what's happening in Harlem right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's wonderful. I don't see anything wrong with it. There are services now. You can pay for your groceries by check in stores, and they deliver. I think it's a wonderful balance. I don't have a problem with it. I know there are people who do, but I don't. I support it.
Okay. So I think that's all in such a wonderful story. Yeah, I mean, if you have any remarks you want to make about Longwood.
No, I think we covered it pretty much. Homes are now going for well over $500,000. Those $19,000 homes.
Yeah.
And the thing, of course, is, you know, the economy ruins a lot of things when it goes down, because the Landmarks Preservation Commission staff, I'm sure, is reduced, so that they don't have the manpower to go up and look and do the research that needs to be done. So, you know, that's difficult for areas. If there are any violations in the community, in the historic districts. They don't have a staff that goes up and cites people for things. I mean, they do, I think they used to, but I don't even know if they still have that person, have anyone. So that contributes to, I think, part of the breakdown in the infrastructure. As president.
Sorry.
Go right ahead.
Now, it's interesting because I was speaking with Tony Wood, and he says that traditionally, when there's a downturn in the economy, that's good for preservation because it's not as neighborhoods are not as threatened by developers. But you feel that.
Well, let me just say this to you. I respect Tony more than anyone in the city of New York because I think he has such wonderful insight. And of course, he had that wonderful book he wrote on preserving New York City. So if he thinks that, then I go along with him. And he's a good friend.
You know, it's often said that the price of preservation is constant vigilance. And it seems that has that really
That's
been
an interesting statement
Longwood?
Because I said earlier that Longwood has survived. It has. We haven't lost any buildings. I think my ghost is still up at the community planning board, so they're afraid. One of the things that can destroy a historic district is you stabilize that community by designating it. And because it's stabilized and it's a nice place to be, city and state agencies want to bring people in there. And they'll buy the houses and go in with, I know of two in Longwood where it happened. Mental health, they bring in people who are emotionally challenged and mentally challenged, and they need a place to stay, and they want a nice environment for them. So they come in. I think that balance is not good. But in retrospect, it hasn't bothered the community at all. What they do is they go in, however, and they'll tear out kitchens and bathrooms and put whatever they want in there. And then that makes it difficult for the owner if she or he wants to sell it later, then they have to restore it. And that's, I remember in Harlem, the Mount Morris Historic District, they put in a penal institution in the most beautiful area of that district, of Mount Morris. And I thought that was horrible, and there's still something there. And they tore down buildings, and it was. So I think the worst offenders are the city and state.
So this has happened in Longwood?
No. The reason I went there is I used to go up. Marilyn and I both would go up to the community planning board whenever there was a request to convert some of these houses and to do, and we would just blast them and just say, no, not in my neighborhood. You know, the balance was too fragile, and it was working, so why tip the scales in the wrong direction? Now, we lost some of those. We had different agencies did go in, I think three or four, but they conformed.
Did they actually purchase the houses and move into them?
Yeah. Okay. And take their clients in who lived there. And then our biggest fight was we had this awful hospital right in the midst of Longwood, Prospect Hospital. And it was deserted. and it was sold to a group who needed to house transient workers or home families, transient families. And we were very afraid because, you know, people like to hang out in the street, and we didn't want that. Longwood wasn't like that. Well, they brought in a wonderful guy who was the executive director who worked with us, and we never had a problem. Do they have problems now? I don't know. But we didn't then. He's that original executive director is no longer there. But I think that Longwood is still nice. Marilyn still lives there in her house, and I've never heard her complaining about anything.
Do you see yourself returning to Longwood at all?
No. No.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time.
It's a wonderful, I enjoyed it.
Wonderful story to hear.
It was a good trip back down memory lane.
Yeah.